For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Gray Malkin Lane Channel Patreon. I am here with two of my very favorite people, Caroline Bird and Melanie Bolin. We'll have them both introduce themselves briefly. Today we're going to be focusing on a character that is kind of supplemental. I wish I liked this character. After doing a read through, I think I like him less than I did before, which is, I didn't like him a lot before, but we'll talk about him and we'll talk about why. We are here, I'm going to really emphasize my southern accent here. I think growing up, I called this character Matsuo Tsurayama, but trying to like master Japanese pronunciation online this morning, which I'm not great at, I think it's supposed to be pronounced Matsuo Tsurayama. So Matsuo Tsurayama is a villain associated with Psylocke and Kenon. We're going to talk all about him today and his history. I guarantee you've heard of him, but you probably haven't read his stuff front to back, so we're doing it for you. Let me welcome both of my guests. I'll have you both introduce yourselves, let us know your name and pronouns, where we might know you from. And I know you guys are real life friends. I'd love to hear a little bit about your early friendship and how you met. Let's begin with the incredible Caroline Bird. Hi, Caroline. Welcome back to Gray Malkin Lane.
Thank you for having me. So I'm Caroline Bird. I'm also known as Caroline Cosplay, all over, you know, socials. I go by she, her. As far as how Melanie and I met, I want to say it's through my Psylocke page on Facebook it started out called The World of Psylocke, and then when they split them into two, I changed it to the world of Betsy and Kanon. She's been a member for a long time, and we just kind of chit-chat about it every now and then, and it grew from there.
And welcome to Melanie as well.
I'm Melanie Bolin, she, her, and I'm at Geeky Fit Online. I am not really like someone who runs a lot of things. I just am a fan who has met other fans and have had a great time with that. I believe I did meet Caroline through the Psylocke group, because like this was forever ago and we still haven't actually met in person. And unfortunately I'm not making it to Uncanny this year, so that still won't happen. I think that like a while ago, before Psylocke became a wildly popular character, like she was one of the first people I found who was also like equally obsessed with the character and had a tattoo, and I was just like, ooh, okay, I like this, I'm going to join your page. And then like started following her and cosplay, and she introduced me to you, and
I've had the pleasure of meeting you both in person, so I can guarantee you're both real in real life. And you're both lovely humans. You've also both met at least one of my children, which is an odd thing because most people have not met my children. Lovely, lovely to see you both here. We're here to talk about Matsuo Tsurayama, who is tightly connected to Psylocke. And I'm going to give the like 30-second version of the Psylocke story. We have Captain Britain introduced in the mid-70s. He's got a supermodel sister / pilot / spy named Betsy Braddock, who becomes Captain Britain for a half a second. Chris Claremont later brings Betsy into the X-Men as Psylocke. She's got purple hair and a hood and a psychic knife, and she's kind of a fun character. And then the Siege Perilous happens a few years later, and this is the, like, King Arthur, like, you get judged and we'll spit you out into a different life, basically, kind of thing. She lands in Japan, where her mind is swapped into the body of a Japanese assassin. She's called Lady Mandarin, and then she gets stuck in that body for a really long time. They're trying to work the continuity out of that, and later they introduce, oh, that body she's in is actually a completely different character named Kanon Psylocke, and it takes a little while for everything to sort itself out. And by a little while, I mean like 30 years, because the character Psylocke, who is the Japanese woman trapped in the body of the British supermodel, gets killed from the legacy virus using the name Revanche. And it's not until just a few years before Krakoa where they both get their original bodies back. So now the Psylocke we're seeing in the comics, soon to be written by Alyssa Wong, which I'm very, very excited about their work on this character, is the original Kanon character. character, while Betsy Braddock is back in the body of Captain Britain and is currently a member of X-Force. That's the really quick version of this story. I would love to hear from both of you where your kind of early fandom of these characters began and how you're feeling about their new journey in the comics.
Like, my fandom of X-Men started with the animated series, which she was not really in. And by the time I had bought my first comic, she hadn't even had a speaking line in the TV show. But the first issue I ever bought was X-Men number 21. And that was the very beginning of Conan had come back and they're trying to figure out who they were at that point. So I jumped in this comic knowing who Gambit and Beast were, but seeing these two purple-haired women trying to figure out who they were. It's a confusing story to begin with, not knowing the characters. And even if you do know the characters, it's confusing. But I think that like the first panel that I saw when I opened up the comic book was Betsy with Wolverine's claws on either side of her neck and getting accused of not being who she was. So it was like the first comic I bought, her face was just front and center, and their whole plot was kind of what I was thrown right into. And I think that's what made me really start to like that character. And I read the comics religiously from that point on and was really a fan of her by the time that she died in Extreme X-Men. And then I, you know, was sad for years because she was gone and then she came back. But, you know, in that learning all of her history and still being utterly confused by it, but the more I learned about her, the more I liked her, because I'm like, you know, she's been hard with the body swap and everything, but she's a really cool character. And I like now that they're giving them their own lives. And they honestly could have done that sooner. They could have done that, I think, when she died after Extreme X-Men, but that's a whole other thing. They had an opportunity and they did not go with it. But I'm excited for the new title because, like, I enjoy that they have Betsy back in her British body and that she's been Captain Britain, and that's been a fun journey to go on for the magic side of things. But I'm really looking forward to learning more about Conan and to see how her character develops more, because she's still not really that well known. Like, we've gotten hints of her stuff, but she's still not like fully fleshed out. She's still a very new character. So I am looking forward to that solo series, and it's being written by someone who absolutely loves her as a character. So they will do her well.
I first got to know Betsy in Psylocke's form in the X-Men Blue era in the early and mid 90s. I always thought of her as the character most likely to get a wedgie in combat because she's wearing like a bathing suit, like doing high kicks all the time, which the amount of writing that would do is very uncomfortable. She had a wild journey for a while there, like in the Exiles and the Extreme X-Men, and she's dead and she's back to life and she's on this team and that team. Even Kanon in the Krakoan era has been on like five different teams in the last, you know, 6 or 7 years, which is crazy. Now she's with the, you know, X-Men by Jed McKay in Alaska, which is not a good place for a purple bathing suit either. Caroline, I know you have famously done the Cerebro episode on this character. Tell everybody a little bit about your journey with Psylocke as well.
I was first introduced from that Jim Lee cover, you know, the X-Men number one where she was on with the whole team. That was when it was Betsy and Conan's body. So this whole time, for a good like 20 some odd issues, you know, before Revanche came in, I had no idea that Betsy wasn't actually Asian or anything. So when that whole drama, you know, came in, when Conan revealed herself and everything, yeah, that was kind of disappointing for me. But it was even bigger disappointment when she ended up dying, because, you know, I grew attached to her as a character and everything. She was a very passionate person, and it just really sucks that, you know, what ended up happening. Although she had a really beautiful death, I thought, you know, if you're gonna go, that's, you know, it was beautifully written. I continued to follow Betsy because she also grew on me as a character despite everything, you know. Like, it wasn't her fault what happened, so I wasn't gonna like hold that against her or anything. So she was pretty badass. A little bit of part of me also felt that she was still my small connection to Kanon. So if she was still alive and still in that body, I always had a little bit of hope that Kanon would eventually come back, because, you know, as most Marvel characters who die usually do, I didn't think it would take 30 years. Her coming back was a big, you know, fist pump moment. You know, Kanon coming back in what was it, Mystery of Madripoor. Yeah, that was like finally, you know, one of those things.
Because of fucking Sapphire Styx, of all people. I have an episode on that chick.
Yeah, I kind of like, I still had hope, but I was like, God, is this ever going to happen? I was starting to lose it, admittedly. Yeah, when they finally put them back in their own bodies, so to speak, you know, and Teenie Howard and everything, writing Betsy, how I always, you know, felt that it fit her personality more, you know, and going into the whole Excalibur lore and everything, you know, I just felt like it was better for her. It fits her a lot better. You know, that title, Captain Britain, fits her a lot better to me. And then being able to flesh out Kanon more and see who she is you know, we're still, like Melanie said, we're still learning. But yeah, I'm loving it. You know, now I finally have my ninja back, you know, my actual ninja that, you know, I was looking forward to, you know, growing up. You know, I was reading when I was like 10 years old, you know, reading the X-Men books and everything, and finally seeing somebody who was, you know, like, I know we had Jubilee, but she was more of a sidekick, you know, and she was kind of that bratty little, you know, kid. And I loved her because I was a mall rat too, you know, but I wanted somebody who kind of held their own with the other X-Men, you know, that leadership, you know, kind of role, like, and there really weren't any other Asian characters, you know, they were usually the bad guys or, you know, somebody's like submissive girlfriend or whatever, you know, like there wasn't a whole lot. And then Psylocke came along and changed all that for me, you know, and she got me to stick around with the comics. She pulled me in though. So I'm really looking forward to Psylocke solo coming up with Alyssa Wong.
For both of you, what's your favorite Psylocke costume to cosplay?
Probably currently her current one that Ryan Stegman just came out with.
The new one.
Yeah. I mean, I don't get me wrong. I love the Jim Lee one. That's always going to be, you know, a classic and everything. But like you said, the whole wedgie thing, you know, like, and it doesn't matter if I do cut mine to be a little bit more, give me a little more coverage, but it's still inevitable. When my husband has to follow me around the conventions and he picks my wedgies for me, you know.
That's happens, true love, you know? Right there, folks.
Yeah. I mean, he's discreet about it, but yeah, it's one of those things. And there's just something about the hand costume that will always hold a special place in my heart. But the new costume, for one thing, that's all Kanon's, you know, that's just hers. It's not a hand-me-down or anything like that. Full coverage. You know, she finally has pants, you know, and I love the jacket. It kind of gives that edge appeal.
Like Caroline said, the Jim Lee era one is iconic. And when I cosplayed that one back in my 20s and early 30s, I definitely wore double dance tights underneath and then like just taped all of the leg pieces to the dance tights so I didn't have to worry about having bare flesh. That made me feel a little more comfortable in that one. It is iconic and I had a lot of fun doing it back then, but now that I'm in my 40s, I definitely prefer more full coverage. I recently did the disassembled Betsy Braddock outfit, which is fun, but not those off the shoulder ones are not the easiest to do. So far, like of the newer stuff, I really love the Elspeth Braddock one, which is one of the Captain Britain alternatives. I love that one, but I would love to someday do full Captain Britain armor, because at this day and age, like being the white girl that I am, being very white, like I want to stick with doing British Betsy, and I am totally for cosplayers cosplaying whomever they love. And back in the day, I cosplayed Psylocke all the time, but there's so many wonderful cosplayers out there doing Psylocke, Caroline included, that I personally, of my choice, want to take a step back and explore other options of Betsy in the cosplay realm for myself, because there's just so many wonderful Psylocke out there now of both Betsy and Kanon. So I enjoy seeing what everyone's putting together, no matter what version it is, really.
When Chris Claremont, every few years when he was on the book, and he was on the book a long time, he would kind of change things up. When you read his X-Men run front to back, it changes forms all the time. When he brought Betsy in, it's, you know, he brought Rogue in at one point, and everyone's like, who's this lady? You know, he brings Betsy in, he brings Longshot in, he brings Havoc in, just a bunch of characters that people didn't really care about kind of mixed in with the classics. And whenever Claremont writes a character, we grow to love them, right? Betsy's part of the Australian Outback era in the comics and a little before that. When the Siege Perilous happens, a lot of the characters are being written into kind of new destinies. That's a way to end something. And then there's a long period of time in the X-Men books where there's not a clear direction. There's not a clearly established team of X-Men. So we're going to open our review today in kind of the late 80s in that era. The Siege Perilous took each of the characters that passed through it and gave them a wildly different life. Havoc ended up as a Genosian magistrate in a high-level position in the government. Colossus ended up as like a painter with no memory of his former identity. We won't review these each, but all of the characters ended up passing through these experiences and then eventually making a choice to return back to their old life. But Psylocke was the one that had kind of a permanent imprint. So Betsy was using the name Psylocke in her British body with her purple hair, and then she ends up in the body of this ninja. A lot of retroactive continuity later added when we kind of figure out who this ninja was and the identity of the person. And the person who's largely connected to that story in the comics is Matsuo Tsuriyama, who's created specifically for this story and then used by Claremont quite frequently as a person who's tightly connected to Betsy and to Kanon. The more backstory we get of him, the more we realize his connection to Kanon exists. And then we also get him connected to Wolverine very tightly, because this is also the guy who killed Mariko Yashida. So we have some key X-Men storylines with him. Some of them are really unbearable. What was your first connection to Matsuo? And before you began your research today, is this a character you were fond of?
My first introduction was through the whole Psylocke storyline. You know,
the Siege Perilous one, the Lady Mandarin story?
Yeah, that whole, yeah, the starting from the Lady Mandarin storyline. I don't recall, because I did read some Wolverine solos. I started out reading Wolverine growing up, and then I went into the X-Men. So, but I can't remember if I ever came across him in my reading at that time. So, the most memorable ones was the Lady Mandarin storyline was when I first remember him. I guess he didn't really make a big impression on me in the Wolverine ones, you know?
So it was like X-Men 21 through 30, whatever that was, 30, when Ravonne had joined the X-Men for a bit, because he was introduced at that point as her former lover. So that was really my introduction to him, was just her former lover. I didn't know fully, like, I knew he was with the Hand, but I didn't know what the Hand was at that point. I didn't know how much of a crime lord he was. He just seemed like, you know, some poor dude that made a mistake and lost the love of his life. The more I learned about him, like you, the more I was like, wow, okay, not really. This guy's a big, you know what. But upon first reading, I just saw him as the ex-lover, and I didn't really know what else to make of him at that point.
There will be a lot of conversations about things like the Hand in the future on my show. There's some great portrayals, some problematic portrayals. Just as a quick introduction, the Hand are a clan of ninjas that dress in red. They have a few wildly different types of stories. They have the ancestral temples and the bases where they're like a Japanese secret society, like a criminal organization. But then you get a lot of stories kind of beginning in Daredevil and expanding from there, where they're this ancient clan that's like hundreds of years old. And then at a certain point, they become like they're demon worshippers. There's a thing called the Beast of the Hand, who's this giant like Satan-like creature who, if you sign up with the Hand, you like sell your soul to this creature, and if you die, you melt into ash, and then he brings you back. There's a bunch of these stories where Wolverine and like Dr. Octopus and all these characters have been resurrected by the Hand, and they have to try to reclaim their lives. Elektra and Daredevil and Stick and the Chaste, and there's all these stories that kind of meld in and out. Outside of that, we also have the character of the Mandarin and the Yellow Claw. We talked about in a recent episode on my show reviewing Iron Man 68 through 70, a Sunfire story. We talked a lot about these characters, kind of the Fu Manchu portrayal of, you know, very effeminate, Chinese or Japanese warlords, and like the template of that's existed in the comics for a long time. The Mandarin specifically is primarily an Iron Man villain. He's Iron Man's first like really arch villain. He is the often very yellow face kind of caricature painted on the page. He's an ancient guy, a guy who like taps into ancient technology and has power rings, and they've tried to redefine him a bunch in the comics, but most of his early appearances are extremely problematic. So the story opens here in Uncanny X-Men 255 with Mandarin having a deal with Matsuo Tsurayaba, who works for the Hand. And you almost get the idea that he's like the Hand's PR guy. He's like trying to form some sort of like connection for the Hand with this like base of power, with this awful criminal overlord. We won't go a ton into it, but it does matter in that way. Claremont loves to bring back continuity that he's written in other titles. So in Uncanny X-Men 255, and I don't think a lot of X-Men readers would recognize this, we open in Matsuo's story in the Black China Sea at a base they identify as the former headquarters of Emile Vachon, who is a villain Claremont wrote and created back in Deadly Hands of Kung Fu 32 and 33, which is kind of fun. So if you want to go look at a Claremont deep dive, there's one for you. Matsuo, the name itself, means pine tree loosely, and Tsurayaba, his last name, is not actually a last name, but it does seem to tie into the name Tsuraya, which according to my research means like the Carmelia flower. I don't know what we want to take from that. If you guys have my dialogue pulled up, Caroline, would you read Matsuo's lines, and Melanie, would you read the man? These are the two of them meeting right at the beginning in Uncanny X-Men 255.
I apologize in advance for my pronunciations of some Japanese names.
If you get Matsuo Tsurayaba down, that's, I think you're good.
Okay, so Matsuo Tsurayaba, did I do that right? Okay. Matsuo Tsurayaba, this is indeed an honor. I never imagined my message would merit so exalted a response.
I've been meaning to come out anyway to inspect your progress, and I found your report most intriguing.
As you can see, sir, all is well in hand.
And the woman?
She was found a week ago, washed up on our shore. No clothes, no identification, no memory either, we soon determined.
What about your surveillance systems? How could she approach undetected?
She is invisible to our scanners. In fact, as far as our electrical systems are concerned, she doesn't exist. When we began interrogating her, she replied in the questioner's native tongue perfectly, no matter how obscure the dialect. Our spirit weaver psychics determined the woman is a telepath. She was picking up each person's language from their thoughts. That's when we requested guidance from the, is it pronounced Jonin?
The Jonin. And a Jonin is like a Japanese crime boss. That's kind of what you need.
And well, you did, my friend, for this woman is known to me. She is immune to X-Man, Psylocke, and by all the gods, whoever were, I know full well what the hand may do with her.
Okay, so Betsy washes up on the shore after the Siege Perilous. They find her, they contain her. Matsuo recognizes her and immediately sees what he can do with her. Now, remember that. He made a decision right at the beginning to do what he's about to do, even though we don't know his backstory yet. But that's what we start with. Now, the word Jonin can basically be translated to like a high ninja or like a skilled shinobi who has like superhuman potential. It's basically like a high-ranking position in a ninja clan. So we jump to 256. Matsuo takes his members of the hand to kill some men who have been loyal to the Mandarin as a demonstration of his power. When the ninjas are defeated, he approaches the Mandarin directly and he's offering his new assassin's services to the Mandarin. I'll read the Mandarin here, Caroline, if you'll keep reading Matsuo. Mandarin says, "You have slain those who sworn faith in me, those who acted for me as my hands. Why, pray tell, should not your miserable life stand forfeit for theirs?"
"Lord Mandarin, I am Matsuo Sarada, and I stripped you of those lesser hands that I might offer you the services of the true hand."
"I am told the hand is no more. Or are you like Hydra, vaingloriously boasting that should one limb be severed, a score more will grow to take its place?"
"Whatever the fate of one hand, Lord, a man may still rely on the other."
"I see. Are you Jonin or common Genin?"
"I am an emissary."
"What need have I for you, emissary of your fabled order of assassins? The least of these rings," showing his rings of power, "is sufficient to reduce you to dust with but a thought."
"Yet the truest measure of a weapon is the skill of whomever wields it. I stand before you, Lord. Your precious hands do not. And should I wish to lay the Mandarin low, it's said all I need to do is summon the American Avenger, Iron Man."
Ooh, he's throwing some shade. "Yet you live, Islander. Make use of your bounty."
"Before the century is done, Lord, Hong Kong will revert to Chinese sovereignty."
And this is a literal thing. Go look it up. Hong Kong was independent until 1999 when it returned to its sovereignty. Yeah, so keep going.
"Yet even now, winds of change blow from the Gobi to the South China Sea. The Middle Kingdom is in ferment. The old men in Beijing have broken faith with the people. Their world will end with their lives. Not in all history has there been such an opportunity for the right man in the right place to carve himself an empire, the likes of which this world has never known."
Now, this is already complex because Matsuo is Japanese, Mandarin is Chinese, and there's a very complex history between these two countries. So, again, we're not going to delve a lot into the impact here, but he's seeking to join his underworld with like the kingpin of China, basically, oversimplifying. "You tell me nothing I do not already know."
"But who will follow a man who can be beaten by the most common Yankee superhero? Even a Mandarin can lose only so much face, Lord, before even the most fearsome power is rendered impotent and useless, and his once noble name becomes little better than a joke."
"You, I assume, offer a solution," says the Mandarin.
"A means, Lord, to strike at your foes with impunity, to know their minds' most intimate secrets, that you may cut out their hearts."
And Mandarin is shown this new asset, Psylocke, who has been somehow placed into the body of an Asian woman. Now, later we're going to learn Mojo, Spiral, and the Siege Perilous were all involved, and his quote-unquote sensitive is telepathically giving her a new purpose. She's being reprogrammed as an assassin, basically. So Psylocke's guided through some intensive psychic exercises, and then she is brought before the Mandarin. And in 257, we see the iconic Jim Lee design of the new Lady Mandarin. You know, we put the word lady in front of any guy, we see what happens. This is an iconic costume for many people. What are your thoughts on the Lady Mandarin suit, Melanie?
I like it. It's a cool design for her short-lived villain era. I actually at one point did cosplay it, and I still have it in a thing under the house. It's very cool. The headpiece makes no sense, but it looks cool on the comic book page. It's a good costume. I love Jim Lee's art. I mean, that's what I was raised with, so I'm all here for Jim Lee.
Okay, so I'm gonna spoil. We'll get there in a minute, but this body is Matsuo's ex-girlfriend, the love of his life, who he also killed, and he has transplanted another woman into his girlfriend's body, basically. We'll get there in a minute, but he's watching her train. He's making her call him master. He's watching her bathe, and then he sends her to fight Wolverine and Jubilee. So this guy's a creep, you guys. He's a fucking creep. We're gonna learn that right away, and it just sticks the whole time, no matter how certain writers try to sympathize with him.
He's like an overconfident creep.
He's really gross. He's skeevy gross. In 258, Matsuo subjects Wolverine to psychic torture. He's trying to brainwash him into a hand agent, which is a story we see for Wolverine a few times. Jubilee protests, and Matsuo grabs her by the throat. But Wolverine's his pain is enough, so it's an enough to like bring him back into the room through Psylocke's ambient telepathy, which then causes a fight to break out. Everybody's overwhelmed by his pain. The hand oversteps and the Mandarin gets put in danger. Mandarin kills the ninjas, rebukes Matsuo for the mistake. And that's kind of where it ends. Betsy has some adventures here that aren't super connected to Matsuo in that she is sent out with the rings herself to commit some assassinations, etc. But she breaks free from all of this relatively quickly. And at the end, we don't really see what happens to Matsuo, except that he lost his deal.
It always made me wonder what the heck Kanon ever saw in Matsuo. If he is capable of doing something like this, you know, to her and to somebody else, I don't know. Like, I don't know if she's got the personality type where it's like, I can fix him, you know? Because he is, I don't know, he is pretty hot. He's got that anime look going with the hair and everything. And so, I don't know. Maybe he's a completely different person to her in private. But yeah, pretty disgusting. Everything that he's doing, even if it's not directly to Kanon, it's to her body.
Yeah.
You know, Betsy's the one inside there, yes. And so he's making her call him master and everything. But
the sympathetic takes we get on Matsuo later don't really work for me. And we'll get there in a little while. But Matsuo had a fight with his girlfriend, basically. And because, like, he killed her and he wants her body still, he puts an easier mind in her body, turns her into a weapon, but also he just wants her for himself. Super creepy. There's no redemption for this. He's a worthy.
And he has no problem with pretty much renting her out to the Mandarin, you know, like his ex-girlfriend, you know.
Betsy is also his victim, right? Like, it's both of them, clearly, yes. Like, we know nothing about Kanon yet.
Yeah, and Betsy has no say in what's going on. She has no clue. She's not even herself, you know. She's being programmed to be somebody completely different, somebody that he wants her to be. Everything is being done against her will, and that's pretty disgusting.
So, I mean, it's from a future issue where we learn a lot more about the motivations behind it, but to me, like, one of the grossest things that you were saying is, like, he wants her body, and then the later issue, basically, he kind of fesses up to being like, oh, yes, I would revive your body. And it's almost like, oh, I have your body, good enough. Which is really kind of gross, Matsuo, when it comes down to it. I'm with Caroline on the fact that it really seems like Kanon would have been smarter than to be with someone like this. So I feel like there's a lot that we don't know about him and we never will know about him, but we see the worst parts. So I don't know, maybe he's got some good parts. I don't want to say, you know, whatever. I'll tell you my official feelings on him at the end, but
yeah, we'll get to the Kanon relationship with him, but maybe he has a great penis. Matsuo is part of some surprising stories that I think people don't really remember. He shows up in Uncanny 268, which is where he's in Madripoor with the hand. He's meeting with the Fenris twins, which, again, terrible person, allying himself with terrible people. This is where Captain America, Wolverine, Psylocke, and Jubilee disrupt things. And this is where we also get that, like, Wolverine, Captain America, Black Widow flashback story comes from this era. Claremont will follow up on this story later in a more recent series called Wolverine Madripoor Knights, if you want to look that up as well. Then we jump to the new launched X-Men Volume 2, Number 2. Magneto has caused that, like, giant power blackout across the planet, and Matsuo sees an opportunity. He goes to a Russian general or a Soviet general named General, this is pronunciation that I will struggle with, Okhranayev, to free the operative Omega Red from stasis. And this is Omega Red's, like, first storyline as well. He then orders the hand to kill the general because he wants to use Omega Red as his new weapon. So this guy has this idea of, like, if I can acquire the right weapon, I can then hire them out to whoever, right? Like, that's his kind of whole MO at this point. He is brainwashing Omega Red, trying to send him against Wolverine. There's another meeting with the Fenris twins in Germany. Like, I'm paying for things, and they want to use Omega Red to get, like, higher ground in the upstarts team. Then there's the Omega Red hand attack on the X-Men. In issue 5, Matsuo monitors the fight with Dr. Cornelius from the Weapon X project. So those two are also friends. Another truly terrible person. The Fenris twins are also here. Wolverine is soon brought back to them by Omega Red, and they string him up to experiment on him, but, like, Maverick and the X-Men free him. In issue 6 is where Matsuo takes over the mind of Psylocke, using, like, a post-hypnotic suggestion that he's implanted there, and he makes her fight Rogue. The X-Men are captured. Wolverine, still being brainwashed, ends up escaping. Matsuo, Dr. Cornelius, and the Fenris twins then bring Sabretooth in to help him, and this is where Birdie shows up. I love Birdie. I have an episode on Birdie with Terry Blass. In 7, 7 is where we learn that Wolverine's healing factor cannot be mass-produced. Matsuo is mad, and he orders Wolverine to be tortured while looking for memories of the carbonadium synthesizer, which is like the one device that he thinks can be used to help control Omega Red, who is otherwise uncontrollable with his like death spore virus tentacles. I don't really know what a carbonadium synthesizer is. We're not going to worry about it today, but Matsuo was really obsessed about it for a little while. We then see Wolverine suffer. Psylocke breaks free, defeats Omega Red and Matsuo. She kicks him in the face. And in a moment of chaos, Matsuo grabs Psylocke by the hair, pulls her head back to expose her throat, but she ends up escaping. And Matsuo disappears when the building falls down during the fight. So we then have an exchange of dialogue between Matsuo and Dr. Cornelius, who again is the guy behind Wolverine's like adamantium Weapon X shit from like that Marvel Comics Presents story. Carolyn, will you read Matsuo here? And Melanie, will you read Dr. Cornelius? So this is in a Berlin cemetery in X-Men number 7.
This is sacrilege!
Many are the sins I've committed in my quest for power, Doctor. Sacrilege being the least of these. 3 decades ago, Janis Hollenbeck was buried here, but her bones were not all that was interned within the ground that night. Logan made sure that whatever secrets she possessed regarding the sea synthesizer would follow her to the grave, literally. But Wolverine is not as clever as he'd like to think.
So yeah, and then Wolverine is inside the coffin that's buried in the ground. So they dig it up, but Wolverine buried himself alive in order to set a trap for Matsuo. Just how long was this man under there? Matsuo gets slashed with a yag, and Cornelius gets shot by Maverick, but Matsuo gets away. So this starts the, like, Matsuo has like brainwashed Wolverine. He's working with Dr. Cornelius. He's made a foe for life, and it's only going to get worse from here. It's not Matsuo versus Psylocke or Kanon as much as it is Matsuo versus Wolverine from here forward, but we'll get there. What are your thoughts on these kind of early X-Men issues? I think most people forget that Matsuo is involved in all of the Omega Red stuff.
Yeah, like, I, going back and rereading some of them, I honestly can't believe I read them as like a 12-year-old and that they made any sense whatsoever, because they use a lot of big dialogue, a lot of big stories, and going back and rereading them now as an adult, I was like, I must have just eyes glazed over through this part to get to the like baseball games or something. He's pretty prominent in my memory because of how much he showed up in these, even if I didn't remember necessarily until I went back and read it. Like, he's a character that I thought was more prominent throughout the comic series for my entire life, because these are so burned into my brain, only to realize that like he wasn't really around for terribly long, even though he did play some mega big roles in them at the time. I'm looking forward to getting into the Wolverine stuff, because I never realized how connected he was to Wolverine, and some of the stuff between them ends up being pretty badass. So
yeah, these early X-Men issues are all over the place. There's like every couple issues you're like a whole different storyline with different characters. It's really wild.
Yeah, reading them, just like Melanie said, like, you don't realize how big of a storyline that Matsuo has throughout the X-Men comics. Actually, like, he's sprinkled throughout, you know, and you don't even realize it until you kind of go back and reread and kind of add things up, you know, but he's a bigger player than you realize until later on.
So Wolverine's love, who he almost marries until Mastermind fucks everything up, is Mariko Yashida. And Mariko Yashida is the heiress of a crime clan in Japan as well. There's a lot of this stuff going around, friends. She is related to the Silver Samurai, or Kenichi Harada, who is also a member of this clan. And her father is a really, really terrible person. His name is Lord Shingen Harada. And Mariko is trying to like take her family's estate, which includes like ancestral warriors and like crime deals all over the place, and redeem things. And Matsuo and Mariko are often at odds. Mariko ends up getting killed in this storyline that we're about to talk about, although she's currently back as the Scarlet Samurai, I believe is her name in the comics. Am I getting that right? So we're going to jump to Wolverine stories now. We're in Wolverine number 55. Wolverine goes to Tokyo and Matsuo is there, and he is involved in Mariko Yashida's business. Will the two of you read this section? And Melanie, will you do Mariko?
I have it on good authority that Logan is here in Japan. I certainly hope that this odious individual wasn't summoned here to oppose the Hand's takeover of certain underworld activities. I would be forced to make things more unpleasant than they already are.
You presume too much.
Sorayaba Matsuo.
Oh my gosh. Matsuo. My tongue is not working today.
You will address me as Lord, insolent wench.
Which is something that Caroline says to her husband at least once a week.
The head of Clan Yashida calls no more Ninja Monger Lord. For your information, my betrothed knows it is inappropriate for him to be in Japan until I've fulfilled my pledge to divest the Yashida clan of all dishonorable interests. Furthermore, this
Yeah,
business
keep
between
going.
Clan Yashida and the Han has nothing to do with Logan. You have my word of that. If we have anything further to discuss, it shall be over crossed swords.
So she hangs up the phone. The clan's trying to track Matsuo, and some hand guys attack Wolverine, but they fail. They return and they tell Matsuo, "We have failed you, Lord. Is it your wish that we will spill our entrails in atonement?" And Matsuo says,
My displeasure is not such that I will require disembowelments yet.
"No, I won't make you disembowel yourself yet." He then acquires the former Yakuza assassin, Reiko, Reiko. This is another Wolverine character. Wolverine has a lot of characters that I from the 90s that I think people don't really think about very often. He has her eyes removed, which is something that happened to Betsy Braddock because of Mojo and Spiral once. Then he sends her to kill Jubilee with a blowfish toxin. Blowfish toxin is a real thing. It is very, very potently deadly. You die horribly and fast if you ingest blowfish toxin. Things go crazy. Gambit and Sunfire show up here, as well as Scylla Markham, who is a character I can't wait to do a Patreon one day. This is a Reaver lady who's a pilot. And then Silver Fox shows up. This is like Wolverine's lover that was murdered by Sabretooth, but she's back as like a government asset. She's an agent of the Hand here. Things get really chaotic. Matsuo is super annoyed, and he pushes pressure on Clan Yashida to like let him have his power. Silver Samurai shows up. In 57, Matsuo sends Reiko, his assassin that he took her eyes, to offer a buyout of all of Mariko's clan holdings, but she has to cut off one of her fingers as a result. And Mariko's desperate to settle affairs and like make her clan peaceful, like legitimate, so that she doesn't have to live by her father's legacy any longer. So she agrees to cut off one of her fingers, but the blade has also been laced with blowfish toxin. So it only takes a small cut, and she cries out in pain and rushes to Wolverine, and she's in so much pain that Wolverine kills her with his claws to put her out of his misery. And it was Matsuo that poisoned her. In Wolverine 60, Wolverine cuts off Matsuo's hand, and he has it replaced with a cybernetic one that can sprout steel claws. It was made by the Mandarin, and so now we have a cyborg guy. It gets real crazy from here as far as the cybernetics go. And he's now practiced like hacking a dummy of Wolverine to pieces. He's now ignoring the warnings of the Hand that Wolverine is after him. And Matsuo gets his like sad boy moment. He's looking out the window in the rain and thinking about how hard his life is. It is truly a curse to be an artist. One must strive continually for perfection. But how is one expected to contrive an elegant and exquisite criminal event while low-born bumblers and big-nosed mutants persist in meddling? I salvage what I can, but the deaths of minor players are such small satisfactions. He also thinks, I love it when the air is this electric. It fills me with such rapturous confidence. I shall possess the C synthesizer someday. This is the Omega Red thing. I know it. These latest setbacks are merely temporary, and who knows? Perhaps I shall also unravel the secret of adamantium. Wolverine's there. He thinks Wolverine is still the mannequin. Like, he's really fucking high in the scene, you guys. He took away too much weed. Wolverine hacks off Matsuo's new hand, and then he slashes Matsuo once, but agrees to let him live. But he promises, I'm gonna keep coming back once a year, and I'm gonna hack little pieces of you off at a time, which is extraordinarily cruel on Wolverine's part, because also Matsuo can go on to hurt a lot of other people in the meantime. So he's kind of doing to Matsuo what Sabretooth does to him, which is the I'll kill someone you love every birthday thing. I'm gonna come after you once a year and hack off a piece of you is the deal that's made. What are your thoughts on Matsuo's involvement with the Clan Yashida stuff, Mariko's death, and this kind of early rivalry with Wolverine?
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Caroline, do you want to go first here?
At this point, it seems like his early rivalry with Wolverine is more a vanity thing. You know, it more of a pride thing. The whole thing with Clan Yashida, that seemed like it was just business. But the whole thing with Wolverine, that's more of a pleasure thing. You know, more of a revenge and pleasure, you know, thing to get back at him for everything. I don't think Matsuo likes failure. You know, he doesn't like failure. So anytime that, you know, Wolverine steps in and stops him from doing anything, it angers him even more. So that's kind of everything Matsuo is kind of focused on now is getting back at Wolverine. And that's become kind of his life now, his life obsession.
It was like during these comics where in my brain, I was just like, oh man, he's like an Elon Musk. Cause like while all these things are happening that he's, you know, responsible for, he's never the one that's been getting his hands dirty. Like when the whole thing happened with Mariko, he's just sitting in a limo in the rain somewhere hearing about what's happening. And then he's just like, yep, I did that. And that happens like throughout where like, it's like, I guess he's kind of the idea man, or at least he takes credit for it. So he's just kind of like back there pushing buttons and funding things while other people are doing it. And he's taking credit for it is what it seems like a lot of the time based on like some of my reread. By the time like that whole setup with Wolverine happens, because I don't think I read these issues forever ago. So I didn't know even that he was responsible for Mariko's death. So that I was like, oh, it was him. Okay. And then all I could think after this episode was like, I really hope that continuity paid off with this, forgetting that I had already read some of the issues where I knew that it had, but it was decades ago. So I'm fully with Wolverine here. He kind of deserves what was coming to him. And I actually had to go back and relook at the cast list for the movie The Wolverine, because I recently rewatched it. And I was like, out of all the characters, he's Matsuo is not actually in that film, which I guess makes sense because they didn't necessarily follow this plot line. But like with how involved he was with Wolverine to not actually show up in that too, when he could have been like a totally awesome, awful villain to have in there, would have been kind of cool. But yeah, I love this whole setup and like kind of how it goes down. Like Wolverine's a bit of an animal, but I think Matsuo deserves it.
Mariko's death. I don't love when a female character is fridged to propel a male plot line forward.
Right. But Mariko dies of her own accord. You get the idea that she's trying so hard to achieve peace, but she didn't foresee this poison. Or you read it as she like really lacked common sense and now the men have to take over. So I don't know that I love this story, but I'm kind of okay with it. I don't know how you guys feel. I really enjoy the character of Mariko Yashida. When she first appears, she's like the battered wife that Wolverine has to save, and you know, they become lovers after that. It's not until more modern years where I think we get a much more sympathetic voice for this character, but I like her as a very powerful person. And I really like Peach Momoko doing stuff with her, whatever that happens to. Caroline, are you a fan of Mariko?
I liked her as a character. Like you said, I didn't like what they did with her, how they treated her back then. But yeah, Peach Momoko, the way she's, you know, writing, the way she wrote her and everything, it was pretty badass. She was one of the ones I was kind of referring to when it came to like Asians being in the comics and everything, being kind of someone's submissive girlfriend and everything. How she wasn't, you could tell she had some strength to her and everything, but it wasn't really prominent. Like it wasn't really shown, you know, in there. She was more, like you said, she was to kind of move somebody else's story along.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, it seems like she's getting redemption in the more modern comics these days.
Silver Samurai is one of my like top five favorite X-Men villains. I always love when Silver Samurai shows up. Watch in 2025. We'll have a lot more to say about this guy. We just covered his first appearance on my show though, which was really fun back in July. Okay, we're going to jump back to X-Men. In X-Men 18, Matsuo goes to Moscow to meet with Soviet officials. This is the Soul Skinner storyline. It's an old Soviet mutant who's been kept under wraps, but he has the power to like make everyone undead because he absorbs their souls. Omega Red gets sent in after him, and you know, Hamamatsu was like going to lose his asset. But right around the same time, Kanon is back. And this is where we see the assassin returning as kind of a foil to the Psylocke storyline. And she's working for a crime lord named Yoren Henecha. And in 21, we see Matsuo visit with Shinobi Shaw. He has been double dealing with the Games Master, the telepathic leader of the upstarts. The Games Master has given Matsuo permission. I don't know why he needs permission to go after Psylocke, and Shinobi's super pissed. Shinobi is the, again, it's a martial arts word, you know, related to ninjas. He's the son, the super gay son who only wears like open robes of Sebastian Shaw. I'm actually a big Shinobi Shaw fan as well. In 22, Shinobi's late for a meeting. Matsuo says, why Shinobi? What else could one expect from an irresponsible fledgling young industrialist such as yourself? And he's sitting with Lord Tatsuo and Lord Nyorin, and they're planning to discuss criminal profits. Kanon is able to regain some of her memories here. And we learn that she had been the lover and the prime assassin of Lord Nyorin when she'd ended up fused with Betsy Braddock after the Siege Perilous. We'll get that story fleshed out in a minute. That's when Matsuo has found her. In the present, Matsuo's in Shinobi's home, and like the words of Game Master appear, granting Matsuo the chance to kill Psylocke instead of Shinobi. And Matsuo has planned drama. Like he's very into this idea. So we're getting the vibe that Kanon and her former identity has a lot of like Electra energy, right? Like she works for the Kingpin as the assassin, and you know, often gets treated as the lover. We can do kind of that comparison in just a minute. It's in 23 where we get the caption, the home of Matsuo Tsurayaba near the town of Chosin on Japan's Pacific coast. He built it himself by hand from scratch, the way an artist should. Carefully, thoughtfully, with precision and passion. For Matsuo considers everything in life to be a work of art, including most definitely the art of death. For Matsuo is an assassin, as well as an artiste, and no one knows more about the craft of killing than he. Matsuo thinks of himself as an artist, which is the vibe we're getting for this guy. And then Psylocke and Kanon are here, and Matsuo is in full superhero gear for the first time. He's got swords, and they swiftly overwhelm him and hit him with a psychic blade to punish him. Caroline, do you want to tell us about X-Men 31? This is kind of the big Kanon story where we get all the revelations we've been looking for.
We open on a flashback to when Matsuo flirted with Kanon while she was training. He calls her Little Butterfly. Now, this is the thing. You know, a lot of people these days always wonder what her connection is to Butterfly is, and I know it's a little flimsy, you know, but that was kind of a nickname that Matsuo had Kanon back in the day, and she hated it. You know, she wanted to be called, you know, the basically bird of prey, you know, something that's not as delicate, I guess, you know. And then also it was revealed in Fallen Angels that her daughter had the butterfly tattoo on her when she was taken away and everything. So there was that big connection there. Then we move on to the present where Avanche has cut out her own eyes. Those were the cybernetic implants that Mojo put into Betsy's body. So then
because remember, Kanon is in Betsy's body, right, with the cybernetic eyes. So she cuts them out, which is horrifying.
Yeah, she cuts them out and leaves them kind of as a gift, you know, to Xavier, like, here. And then leaves to go off on and confront Matsuo. So in the flashback, he says, what happened to our love, Little Butterfly? To our lives? How could we have gone so wrong? I only wanted us to be happy. You are so beautiful, Kanon. A bird in flight. But this phoenix has not risen from the ashes. Our bodies have been whittled away one piece at a time, serving as incremental payment for the price of our lost soul. Yet there was a time when we were whole, when the future, no matter how filled with conflict and uncertainty, was ours for the taking, ours for the making. It was even that long ago, was it? Why did it all go so wrong? And then she calls him Mata, and she works for Renyorin, and he serves the hand. So basically, it's kind of a Romeo and Juliet type scene where they work for the complete opposites, the enemies of each other. And I know Lord Nyorin, he was in love with Kanon at the time, but she was in love with Matsuo.
So she's fucking her boss, but also fucking like the heir of the local like rival gang. Like, this woman has bad taste.
No. Like, it was never actually, correct me if I'm wrong, it was never actually revealed that she was ever sleeping with like Lord Nyorin.
I think that's fair.
But it did say that he was in love with her. So it was kind of a one-sided love. That's how I read it. It was a one-sided love thing. However, I could see that after the body switch, he gained her in Betsy's body. I could see him kind of doing the same thing that Matsuo did and kind of programming her into thinking that there was more to their relationship than there actually was, and possibly sleeping with her. And then him sending her after like the X-Men and everything. I just don't really understand that. You finally have what you've always wanted, and why are you sending it away and messing it up? I don't know. Sorry, where was I going with this?
So she's the assassin who's in love with the guy who's running PR for the hand, is basically the story. And Matsuo is getting kind of hacked apart. So this is the same story where Spiral visits, and we see see him recount how he made a deal with her because he wanted Canon back after she'd been harmed by the Hand. So again, we'll get more details on that in a minute. So Spiral is the one that repaired her broken body, this time with the mind of Betsy Braddock in it because of the Siege Perilous. And when Canon's mind is inside Revanche, it seems broken and Spiral's really taking joy in messing it up. Spiral has this weird thing called the Body Shop, which is a plastic surgery center in another dimension where she fucks with people and gives them powers sometimes. It's a very odd thing for this character. It's later when we see Matsuo thinking back to his induction into the Hand in the first place. Your life, Matsuo Tsurayaba, is now devoted to the Hand. Love is yours through a commitment of passion to the assassin's cause. When given an assignment, your honor is bestowed through a time-worn motto: kill or be killed. Anything less than that is a failure to yourself, your opponent, and to the Brotherhood. And he had been sent to kill Nyorin, but ended up fighting Kanon. So he's trying to do the duty thing, but his girlfriend is protecting her boss. And as a result of this, she ends up falling off of the cliffs and her body is broken. And that's the state which Spiral enters and Betsy's mind gets transplanted. And it's all kind of crazy. So that's the backstory we get. Then we jump back to the present with Revanche.
So in the present time, Revanche, since she ripped out her eyes and everything, she's now in this blindfold. She goes to Matsuo and confronts him about the transformation. She got him to finally admit, what actually happened. He says, at first, I truly thought that the Mandarin and our Psi Sensitive had been successful, but when I discovered that your minds had been switched, I realized that my plans had been betrayed by another. Then I decided that having your body could be enough, and that I would sculpt of what I could of our love. Take Psylocke's fractured memories and try to mold them into a semblance of what you were. So basically, it's just like Melanie said earlier, I have your body, it's close enough, good enough, whatever, I'll do what I can with this and, take lemons and make lemonade, I hate that part of him. I hate that's what he did and that's what he thought. At the same time, I try to empathize, when people are grieving, you kind of want to feel like if you have even a little bit of your lost loved one back, that it's better than nothing. I don't know, I'm getting Pet Cemetery vibes here, but,
Which works for certain stories, but this guy's a creep.
Yeah, and just the fact that, I don't know, you would hope that the personality would be better than the body. So if you don't even have the personality, then what's the point, really? I don't really understand, because then it's not really her. It's not even a little bit of her.
He's an artiste. He thinks of himself as an artiste.
So yeah, like molding clay.
In 32, Psylocke goes to Lord Nyorin's home, and Matsuo has just killed him. And here's the drama. He clicks on a light, and will the two of you read this interchange?
Yes, little bro. Oh, sorry. Yes, little butterfly, dead, like our love.
You and I never had love between us, Mata. I'm not Kanon.
Then why do you call me by the name only she ever used?
And they move to a cliff where the cliff where Kanon had died, and he wraps his arms around Psylocke and kisses her. And apparently as she died, Kanon saw the truth of her life and passed it on to him telepathically. So when he kisses Betsy, it passes some of Kanon's memories onto her, which is resolving part of her identity crisis. Then he grabs her katana and basically wants to die himself. So keep going.
Look, Elizabeth, as all that was Kanon finally disappears, telepathic energy vanishing like a butterfly into the mist, I must follow her, let my spirit soar alongside hers.
There are other, better ways to do that, Matsuo.
Without her, I have nothing. You are only the shell of what she was. I have learned that lesson once, and I'm willing to pay for my sins. Let your blade then serve as a memento of our tragic love, and let me use it for a fitting death.
They're Romeo and Julietting so hard here.
No, only if you want Kanon to be remembered just as an instrument of death. Is that all she was to you? An assassin?
She was more than that, Elizabeth. Much, much more. She was a dangerous smile when I took her picture, and a forgiving kiss when I showed it to her. She was love and hope.
Then choose to honor her life, not her death, Matsuo. Think of her that way tomorrow.
Wolverine and Psylocke are not afraid to kill villains, and both of them keep letting this man live. It's kind of infuriating. We jump to the next day at Kanon's grave, where Matsuo lays a pair of blades down, and he says, I leave you with both our weapons of death, little butterfly, and I take with me our love, and I promise to carry it in my heart forever. Psylocke says,
you fancied yourself an artist of death, Matsuo Tsurayaba. And Lord knows you've caused enough suffering in your time, but I sense something better in you, waiting to emerge if given the chance. She was wrong. Anyways, I'm giving you that chance, Matsuo. Make something of it. Use it to create something better for yourself. It won't be an easy road to take, but if you succeed, if you find happiness, then you'll have served well to honor the memory of the woman who came to mean so much to both of us.
And we cut to the headstone, which reads, Kanon, love that transcended body and soul. And we, like, conclude the Kanon story, at least for now. It's a fitting end in ways. I hate these endings where, like, if the villain blows up in a plane and they think he's dead but he's actually alive, I get it. But when the heroes let this, like, mass murdering asshole live, like Wolverine to punish him and Psylocke because he thinks he can be better, maybe Kanon's memories are influencing her a little bit. Do you guys like this interchange? The idea that Betsy's kind of absorbing some of Kanon's memories? Like, we're getting a resolution, at least for the time, to this story that's been bothering us for so long.
I do think that the time that Betsy had Kanon's memories and everything, she was able to understand her love, Kanon's love for Matsuo. So she was able to see that maybe through Kanon's eyes, Matsuo wasn't always what we see in public. What everybody else sees as the bad guy and everything, maybe in private he was somebody different, somebody more loving, and somebody who is actually has potential to be worthy of love. So I can see her being empathetic towards Matsuo in that moment.
Like in order to honor Rivanche, who
exactly.
Died. Yeah, I kind of get that.
Yes.
I'm going to cover the Wolverine stuff kind of quickly, and then let's talk about this weird relationship between the two of them. In Wolverine Volume 2, 127-128, Matsuo has brought the hand to Madripoor, where he's stationed himself on like this old decrepit freighter, and he begins working with Hydra to profit off of crime. Wolverine is posing as a bunch of other heroes in a row. It's a weird story. In order to disrupt some villain plots, soon Matsuo pulls Wolverine, Shadowcat, who has been brainwashed by Sabretooth, that's a whole different story, and Sabretooth into a trap, and he plans to make them servants of the hand. Again, against the wishes of the Hydra allies, Matsuo subjected his captives, including Madame Hydra, Jessica Drew, and Tiger Tiger, to assassin brainwashing, but the mutants break free, and Matsuo is shook, and the heroes leave all the mystics and telepaths that worked for him dead, but they leave him alive, and he vows revenge once again. And then we get Wolverine 175. This is the back half of the issue, and I hate this story so much. Melody, will you tell us about Matsuo's adventures in this one? His dialogue here is insane.
I'm gonna start with the dialogue. It's quite the monologue. It is almost time. I, Matsuo Suriyaba, being of sound mind, yes, your eyes have not failed you. I, the great Matsuo Suriyaba, it sounds like a presidential speech, FYI, as respected and feared crime lord. He's like, I'm so great. As respected and feared crime lord as there will ever be within the Japanese underworld, and making out my last will and testament before my time. How have I come to this moment of such despair and defeat? Ultimately, there comes a point in time when every man, myself included, must accept his fate and make his peace with it, and that time has now come. Tonight is the night I die. And it's a really long monologue, but it basically goes with, like, he's basically sick of having Wolverine show up yearly to hack off another part of his body, and he's deciding that he's going to let Wolverine kill him on this night. But then Wolverine doesn't show up because Wolverine happens to be dead that year.
So we get like some flashbacks to how Wolverine visited him once a year and is slowly hacking him to pieces. One year he gets his arm hacked off, and another year he gets another piece hacked off, and he's slowly kind of decomposing. He thinks of Wolverine as this like frightening villain who's just going to come collective as a piece of him every year. So like this is the year he's going to die, but Wolverine can't come this time. It's a bizarre story. I really hate it, but also it's kind of my favorite Matsuo story because he's just caught up in his own shit. You slowly see him decomposing before you. It's interesting from his perspective here.
You know, him recounting every time that Wolverine would come back and take off a piece of him, I'm thinking, like, why hasn't he killed himself yet? I don't know. Like, I think after a certain point, I would get sick of it. And it's probably because he's so arrogant to where he's thinking, one day I'm going to be able to stop him, and he's not going to be able to take another piece of me, and I'm eventually going to, you know, get one up on him or something. And it just shows, like, his whole monologue and everything where he talks about him being the greatest, you know, what was it, the greatest Japanese, you know, underlord or whatever, like what he thinks. That's like Michael Scott with his coffee mug saying greatest boss, world's greatest boss, and he bought it for himself, you know.
I was not expecting a Matsuo Michael Scott comparison to that. But he's dying and decomposing as he like takes time to write out his like will and testament. I am amazing, and this monster whose love that I killed for no reason has come after me. We then jump to the Psylocke Psylocke limited series, which was kind of a fun ride. I enjoyed seeing Psylocke's name on a book at the time, because prior to this, we'd had all the Crimson Dawn craziness where she got her own title with Archangel that one time. Psylocke has a wild history, y'all. Canon has come back evil with the Red Queen and the Sisterhood of Evil Mutants. Caroline, I've heard you talk about this with Connor a little bit, but did you enjoy seeing Canon come back with the Sisterhood of Evil Mutants in this storyline?
No. In fact, I'm still in denial that it was ever actually her. If you're gonna bring her back, I felt like it was such a tease, and it was really cruel.
So she ends up dead again. Psylocke has now returned Kanon's body to Japan, but Matsua has sent the Hand to attack her. The corpse ends up getting destroyed. Psylocke then vows revenge. She has to fight a guy named Fahid Alireza, who's an assassin named Jin, who is working for Matsuo. And he apparently had Jin's pregnant wife killed once to spark this guy into action. Then we get another Japanese character who I love, Yukio, who in my opinion is Storm's greatest love, but that's never confirmed on the page. But Yukio's here. She's trying to help stop Jin from killing Matsuo for some reason. And we finally get a look at Matsuo, and he is looking rough. He's just like a living corpse hacked to pieces. He's giving me, this is awful, and I may have to delete this, he's giving me Michael Jackson energy, like post too many surgeries.
I'm so glad I'm not the only one that had that thought.
And Wolverine is here, and Psylocke finally argues, like, we get it said out loud, like, Wolverine, the way you've been treating Matsuo is ridiculous. And she humanely kills Matsuo, giving him the idea in his mind first that he had been healed and, like, reunited with Kanon. So she gives him this, like, pleasant vision and then humanely puts him to death. And that's my favorite Matsuo story. Like, this guy deserved this so much. Melanie, what were your thoughts on the death of Matsuo Tsurayama?
I mean, it finally happened. I do feel like he was dragged out for a bit with a lot of repetitive storylines, a lot of brainwashing. I don't know that he necessarily deserved a peaceful death, but I do also think that Betsy has still the connection and the memories to Kanon, and, you know, she's not a total animal like Wolverine can turn into. She gave him that, but still got to finally get the kill, which was also a relief to her. I feel like it was about time that he ended, because his story had kind of played out as much as I feel like they could have done at that point. I don't know if he'll meet the Marvel resurrection protocols at any point.
I really never want this guy back. I'm fine. But we have had a couple of retroactive stories. He's in the series Wolverine, Hercules, Myths, Monsters, and Mutants, where he is using hand protocols to resurrect, like, classic Greek monsters to fight Wolverine and Hercules, because he wants Wolverine to kill him. And Wolverine finally does, but then the hand brings him back. This is before Psylocke kills him, I presume, or he's still out there. I don't fucking know. And then we get that story that Chris Claremont wrote in Madripoor Nights, where it's the Black Widow storyline in Madripoor, following up, like, the Uncanny X-Men 260 story. There's a hand warrior called the Corruptor of the Soul. There's an assassin called the Supreme Assassin of the Hand called Psycho Jonin. The Wolverine, Cap, and Black Widow are here, and Matsuo gets powered up by Psycho Jonin, and he calls himself the Tamashi no Assassin, or the Assassin of the Soul. And he's got horns and super strength and glowing eyes, and he rips out of his clothes and he fights these heroes who've been altered, and the heroes win. And I don't know, it's a scary transformation, but fuck this guy. So that's kind of the quick history of Matsuo Tsurayama. Do you have a favorite and or a least favorite story of this character? And what's it been like for you to kind of stack all of this up in one place for both of you? He's got a lot of X-Men residents, despite not having a lot of appearances. Caroline, do you want to go first here?
I don't have a full storyline that's really a favorite of mine. I just have a favorite moment. And it wasn't even like his typical bad guy thing. My favorite was the flashback of where he was taking a picture of Kanon and she was like telling him like not to and everything, and the whole butterfly conversation. I think that was probably my favorite. I don't know, just something about seeing the good in people, even if they are the bad guys, you know, it kind of helps me find a little bit of redemption in the guy, even though he doesn't deserve it.
It was interesting to see everything stacked up just chronologically like this, as chronologically as it can get with his appearances in the comics and how far they've been spaced out over the years. But it was interesting because, like, there were pieces I didn't put together back in the day reading these, as they came out, because in some cases you didn't see him for well over a decade and then suddenly he was back and the brain has to try to remember where he was in the past. And that's what it was kind of like with the Psylocke solo series. Like, I think by the time that came out, I'd forgotten who he was. So I liked getting to go see this all in chronological order and then also see more heavily the connection that Wolverine had to play in this. And even like Jubilee and Gambit and how they kept reappearing in these stories as well. I thought that was a lot of fun to see them. But I think my favorite is honestly, like, as brutal as it is, the promise Wolverine makes to him to come back every year and the fact that he actually did it. I'm glad to have seen that continuity actually followed in the comics, because when that much time goes by, I feel like a lot of times stuff can get lost that it's been set up, you know, decades prior. So even though it was gruesome, and maybe I'm meaner than Caroline because I'm like, he got his comeuppance. But I thought that was kind of a fun plot line that they did within there.
We can root for a villain who has a sympathetic story. This guy does not. But if we give it a sympathetic read and like attach some meaning, he's a career criminal working his way up through the hand, right? Like, and he loves a woman, but he's caught up in the job and she dies in a tragic battle. And then he just goes full insanity supervillain, right? Like, we've seen that story before. And there's like that human side that like Kanan awakened within him and they have their little connection. But once she's gone, he just goes mad with power. And then it's the Omega Red stuff and it's the killing Mariko stuff and it's the Mandarin stuff. And then eventually it's the Wolverine hacking him to pieces. And this man who once had a path forward, like of love with Kanan, he's now like full supervillain, like lonely on a hill, like his body slowly being replaced by robot pieces, miserable suffering, which is what Wolverine wanted for him, you know, as a result of Mariko's death. And then he finally dies humanely. We can put in the cybernetic body shit. We can put in the like he's amped up into a Minotaur story in the middle of all of that. But there is kind of a story arc if we're really looking for it as the guy who fell from grace and went full villain for a period of time, which we've seen characters like Daredevil and Iron Man and Wolverine do, right? Like we can find a certain amount of grace there, except for he's the rapey guy who like took his girlfriend's body and like put someone else's mind in it. That part's super not okay. He's also dealing with the worst people. Is there a Matsuo story you feel like you need, or do you feel like the closure we have on this character is enough to lay him to rest forever?
I mean, if he were to show up in the new Psylocke solo series through flashbacks to learn more about him, I wouldn't be against that, because it would be interesting to see what pieces of him made her fall in love with him to begin with versus just this caricature of him that we get to see. Because I am a fan of the trope of like the villain turned good or seeing the softer side of the villain. I don't like people that are just like way low on like the alignment chart when it comes to D&D stuff, like, you know, the true evils. I like having layers to characters. So if he's brought back in a way that we are shown layers to him that develop his character and his relationship with Kanan better, I would be for that. But do I want to see him come back in the present? Not necessarily.
Ditto on that. Yeah. If I saw him come back, I would definitely be interested in seeing how they met and what exactly about him that Kanan was attracted to. You know, it would. I just have a feeling he was, with him being an artist and everything, and he does seem like a little bit of a flirt too. And they're both passionate people. You know, artists especially are very passionate people. And Kanon, I always, you know, saw her as a very passionate person. So I could see that, how that could be a big attraction for them both. But yeah, what is it about him? Because she doesn't seem like she would be into the total bad guy, you know, personality, the whole persona and everything. Like, oh, you know, he's doing bad things, he's hot and all that. But because he
Now that Kanan is back in Psylocke's body, we had that like Fallen Angel series, which then followed up in the Hellions, where we got a little bit of backstory. She has a child that she lost, right? Like there's pieces of her story that are slowly being fleshed out. Matsuo has not been part of any of that. The writers that have been fleshing those pieces of her story have really been working to give her an identity separate from him, which I think is really important. But it'll be interesting to see if Alyssa Wong does use this character in it at all. He's reprehensible, but I can see that sympathetic spin that some people seem to find. Again, Betsy killing him humanely was like a very nice moment to end him off. So I'm fine with him never coming back. He's a villain. He's a bad, bad dude. Like, this is a villain's villain.
I feel like he had two hearts. Like, I don't know if you've ever watched the show Shogun, you know, how they mentioned how they have three hearts, you know, one that you show to your friends, one that you keep to yourself, you know, and one that you show to like everybody else, or however that was, I can't remember. But I feel like he had two hearts, you know, one that was dedicated to the hand and to all the business that was going on within everything, and one that he kept, that he gave to Kano. So
I wish I liked their love story better. I really dislike it.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I would love for them to flesh it out a little bit more in flashbacks, you know, to show us a little bit more how they met and everything. But he did seem like a very intelligent guy. I think one of his, you know, his biggest downfall was just being overconfident, being arrogant, you know, his being vain. He didn't like failure, so he was too prideful.
Being prideful, know. Being a psychopathic murderer.
Yeah. But he wasn't really one to get his hands dirty too often. He sent other people to do that for him. Yeah, until it really needed to be done. Like, you know, if you can't get the job done, you know, through other people, you gotta do it yourself type deal.
The most surprising part of this research for me was just how many key stories he's connected to. Fenris, the Games Master, Omega Red, Marco. Like, there's a lot of characters that he's been involved with. And then we get that like weird story with the djinn in that last set of appearances where he's like, I murdered your pregnant wife. Now you work for me. And I'm like, holy fuck, this guy's terrible.
Yeah.
Well, my favorite part of this is just spending time with the two of you. It's been lovely to hang out this afternoon. Again, repeating myself, but I think that sympathetic view of him as the career criminal who gives into his darkness because Kanon dies and he just allows that dark version out. You know, Caroline, you mentioned that he has more than one heart. That part is interesting to me, but he's just a fucking terrible person. I really dislike him. Where can people find you both online? And is there anything you would like to plug?
I'm on Instagram at geekyfit. That's GEEKYFIT. Plugging wise, nothing for myself. I would just say give Giant Size Productions and Uncanny Experience a follow because they're doing a lot more X-Men related stuff, not just in Minnesota, but around the country to keep up with what they got going on. I think you should give them a follow.
Excellent.
I am Caroline Cosplay. I'm mostly on Instagram. Occasionally you'll find me in the House of X Facebook pages and everything, the Facebook group, just chatting. As far as promoting goes, I only have the Uncanny Experience coming up later this month. Other than that, I'm hoping to get some relaxation time after that because everything's been so chaotic. So I just want to rest for the rest of the year.
Lastly, I'm Chad Anderson. I keep my own social media private because I got kiddos, but the two of you are welcome to follow me, although I think you both already do. After this episode airs, you can watch for the next Patreon is going to be on the character Khan, who is that Claremont created like crazy supervillain from Extreme X-Men. Number One Cosplay and Sarah Starshine are joining me for that one. I get a double cosplay episodes in a week with the four of you, which is lovely. Out on the main show after this, we will be hitting Incredible Hulk number 172, which is a juggernaut story. And my guests on that episode are Anthony Oliveira, Matt Baum, and author Charles A. Bush. So watch for that. Thanks everybody for hanging out. And thanks Caroline and Melody. This was a delight. It was great to see you both today. We'll see you all back here next time on the Grey Malkin Lane Patreon channel.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.